a grey morning, misty, and it's a little chilly as well with this easterly wind blowing in. Springtime is moving apace, and we're on High Ash Farm with our host, Chris Skinner. And we're between a couple of the fields here, Chris, on your farm, with this lovely row of trees separating the two fields.
Yes, it's a latter planted woodland in about 1850, so it's a good 150 years old now. There was an original avenue of oaks separating the two fields, and because shooting and game and also protection from the wind was so important back 150 odd years ago, this area of woodland was planted right beside that monumental avenue of oaks that runs all the way up here, and lots of Scots pine planted as a nurse crop, and then underneath them and in front of us, oak trees here all right beside us. These are all oaks planted under or close to the Scots pine. That makes the trunks go up straight, so you have really good timber. The oaks have to kind of fight for the light because the conifers are much faster growing, and some of the Scots pine trees in front of us are absolutely enormous. That is as big as any Scots pine can get. That one up in front of us there is about nearly 5 feet through the trunk, 5 feet diameter.
And this band of woodland between the fields is probably about 40 yards across.
Yes, it's not that wide. It's a long area of woodland. It's about close to 400 metres long, getting on for a quarter of a mile long. And we're sort of examining some of the signs of spring, as well as some of the creatures, animals, mammals in particular, that live at the farm here. And there's Rat. He's running ahead of us. He's very excited. He had an invitation from me to join us on this morning's podcast.
Well, Abigail Bonney has emailed to say, what has happened to Rat, Chris? Such a character. He's exactly like my cat Squeak. You've not mentioned it for him for a long time. I don't think Rat would like being likened to a pussycat.
No, absolutely not. He does have quite a good relationship with cats. He chases them up trees and barks at them. But no, he's very amiable. But Rat is kind of stealing the show, and that's why I haven't invited him. He's top-trumping me because of his mischievous antics that he gets up to. And he's just walked ahead of us, and this is one of his favourite spots on the entire farm.
Rat is a terrier with a dash of chihuahua, you always tell us.
Yes, oh, definitely. He's got very large eyes. He's a kind of a sight hunter, we call them, out in the dog world, because it's been Crufts recently. And I did wonder whether to pop him into the flyball competition, because he is so fast. He actually almost looks like a whippet when he's running along. And he's gone ahead of us a bit. I can just see a flash of white around his collar, and he's with me all day every day, but the tricks he gets up to is so embarrassing sometimes that I'll often leave him in the truck, because there's a greater interest in Rat's antics than the wildlife I'm explaining here at the farm. But this is his favorite area on the farm. Now, it's really interesting because we're under full shade, we're under monumental Scots pine. We've just walked up into the woodland a bit, and you can see lots of green on the ground here. And these are foxgloves, and they're going to come into flower around about late May, June time, in all this shade. And because it's been such a wet, damp autumn and winter, normally they'd be almost wilting now, because we're on sandy, gravelly soil. The field next to us is called Frozen or Friston Field on the old maps from years ago. And that just is sandy ground full of stones. You can see lots there. Oh, Rat's coming back. He's said, yep, I know there's something in this area, because the master's talking and has stopped walking up the woodland. So he's brought himself back. Now, when we turn round and look, can you see the ground is about nearly 2 feet taller than where we're standing?
Yeah, there's a hump in the middle here, isn't there?
Yes, and it goes right the way through. And the same here. on this side. The ground is good, higher than my knee, each side of us, and it's a warren. The whole thing is one warren, and warren means a guarded place from years ago. It was actually one of the early meanings of the word warren. It was a fenced-in area, a secure area. And it was also an early name for a brothel, but we'd best not talk about that. And Rat is now disappearing down one of the rabbit holes. And there are between 250 and 300 rabbit holes right beside us.
And this is an active warren?
Absolutely. We have over 100 rabbits here. And at the moment, we're being filmed because just over on that little tree trunk there is a camera. One of our trail cams, and on the podcast that we hope to put out next Sunday, we'll have a look. And Rat has decided that there's a rabbit down that particular hole, which is why I don't bring him, and he's busy digging it out with his front feet, exactly the way the rabbits dig out. They scrab with their front feet and move the soil round between their hind legs and create these labyrinth of holes.
Oh no, he probably is digging, isn't he?
He is.
Does he ever catch one?
No, he doesn't. He's very good because the holes here, there are so many. Let's just walk up to the warren a little bit. I'm just going to show you something that proves how many holes there are here. If you just watch me, and I'm going to walk out just a few steps like this, and immediately
he's sunk in.
Careful. It's not possible to walk on it because the whole ground just collapses, and it's quite a problem for farmers when rabbits go out onto freshly planted cereal fields with their tractors, and the ground can actually collapse.
It becomes like a honeycomb.
Exactly.
And the bits between then collapse.
Yes, exactly. So there's a lot of social hierarchy in the rabbit colony.
I don't like to say anything, but where's Rat?
Now you can see why I don't bring him. He has disappeared with little bits of soil flying out of the hole, and that's the only sign of him. He gives me a heart attack. Anyway, we're likely to see a few rabbits bolting out of different holes any moment. And that was one of the ways that rabbits were controlled in the past, not with terriers like this miscreant one, but with ferrets. And that would be, remember, there's no historical record, because we go right back to Anglo-Saxon times and Roman times here at the farm. Nothing relating to rabbits from the Roman records, and nothing from the Anglo-Saxons. And we think rabbits were introduced as a source of food and fur as well, back by the Normans years and years and years ago. And there's quite a lot of references to them from about mid-1100s onwards. So it's probably in the 12th century they were introduced as a very valuable source. And they were kept in fenced-in areas. And part of the sign, oh no, he's gone down another hole. And they were kept in fenced-in areas, sometimes in islands just off the coast. Anglesey had a large warren, A, to contain them, and B, there weren't foxes on some of the islands as well, which is another main predator of rabbits.
They are a good source of food though, aren't
yes.
they? And in various times of crisis over the years, even in recent, within people's lifetimes now,
absolutely.
During the Second World War,
yes.
a lot of country folk would have relied on rabbits.
Absolutely, and it was a crucial source of food and very much part of the English diet. It was called coney back then, C-O-N-E-Y. It was the name given to the adult rabbits, and rabbit was actually used for the younger ones. So it almost had two names, and you can still see public houses, pubs around the country called the Coneys or the Three Coneys, and so it's one of their many names. And so huge, valuable source of food, and I can remember delivering rabbits. There was a full-time warrener here at the farm. There are six distinct warrens here at High Ash Farm because of the sandy soil. Rabbits like sandy, well-drained soil with close grazed pasture, and because the soil's easy to dig. And there's reasons for them choosing that, because it doesn't flood.
So this was a warren when you were a child?
Yes, absolutely. This warren has been here, and as I tried to walk across it, it very much demonstrated how unstable the soil is. Although there's large trees here, it just collapses under your feet if you try and walk on them. And because fresh soil's brought up all the time, with the rabbits scrabbing and digging, you have an ideal seedbed for lovely woodland plants like these foxgloves. But I can remember delivering rabbits that had been ferreted or shot to a very large butcher's shop right in the centre in Norwich, exactly opposite Norwich Cathedral, and there'd be rows of rabbits and hares hanging out in public display. I mean, there'd be a public outcry if you did that today, to actually show animals hanging there. People's sensitivity has increased with actually seeing a whole animal hanging there dead. There'd be pheasants, partridges, all sorts of game that would be for sale. And of course, it was a hugely valuable food source, as well as the fur that was used much earlier on. And so that food source rapidly changed. In 1953, there was a disease brought in by the rabbit flea, and it was called myxomatosis. And we think there was close to 100 million rabbits back then in the early 1950s. So they're a huge problem. And the disease spread absolutely like wildfire through the rabbit population and brought it down to less than a quarter. But after it was 1955, 56, 57, in the years following myxomatosis, that cereal yields went up, and it just demonstrated how much damage that rabbits had done. And once they were fairly well eliminated, it wasn't until successive years, the late 50s, early 60s, that people started to notice by the scars around rabbits' eyes that rabbit recovery was starting to happen and immunity was starting to come back in. And then the poor rabbits has suffered in recent years a new disease where they actually hemorrhage inside. It's called rabbit hemorrhagic disorder, so that's sort of again decimated. I mean, that's absolutely deadly. Myxomatosis takes sort of 6 to 10 days to kill a rabbit. Rabbit hemorrhagic disorder will take like 24 hours. And quite often they will die in their burrows. It's that rapid. They just hemorrhage and die.
So really, we haven't been very kind to the rabbits.
No, in every way. I mean, I think it was 1939, was it? Flanagan and Allen sang a song, "Run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run, run, run." And this is where the farmer comes in. Don't let the farmer have his fun.
We'll get by without our rabbit pie.
Exactly. So it's imprinted on our memory as part of our culture way back. And I think it was Spike Milligan who said, "I spied a young rabbit, eyes full of pus, the result of scientific us." And that's a Spike Milligan down to a T. And
but something like Watership Down has had a very important role to play in the general perception of how we deal with wildlife and the countryside and the environment, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Richard Adams?
Yes. And it's that balance between looking after wildlife and enjoying it, because often children have rabbits as pets, so they've formed a huge part of our society. And once you study rabbits, you find they have an equally kind of role in society as well, in their own world. And so you have in a rabbit warren like this, you'll have a dominant buck. Although there's perhaps 100 rabbits living here, there'll be one dominant buck. He'll be scrapping and fighting other upserps. The does will be allowed to bring out their, have their young in the deep burrows here under the where we're standing, and they'll have four or five kittens, and they'll take some fur off their own chest and nurse them. They're born pink, blind, and absolutely helpless. Unlike hares, almost the opposite. They're born out in the open, not in a burrow, and their eyes are open from the word go. But the subordinate females are not allowed to bear young in the warren. They have to dig their own holes out in the fields, and that causes a problem. So they dig down to start with, then horizontal, and they're called stops. And the reason they're called stops is after the doe rabbit has given birth, one of the subordinate does, she goes down and gives the little kittens a nurse just in early evening. Then she'll cover up the stop hole in order for foxes or badgers, stoats, weasels, there's a whole list of predators, to dig out the hole and find the young. And then she'll carefully fill the hole in so you wouldn't actually know it's there. Really clever. Rat has just emerged. Hello, Rat.
Rat.
Oh, you're in favour. He's wagging his tail before he goes off to the next burrow. Yes, my heart's been in my mouth while I've been talking because I couldn't see my dog. And in the past, I've known him to go in a hole here and come out about 20 yards away because, as I said, it's a cocoon under there. So there's a lot of hierarchy in the rabbit world as well, and what they love is easy digging sand like this, which is the warren we're standing on, and the close grazed pasture out beside us. And at the end of the beginning of the myxomatosis era out on the downs, the South Downs in particular, farmers had never been able to graze it before, but just because the burden of rabbits, they graze the grass down so short past its little tillers, so it actually dies, and then the ground becomes covered with things like ragwort and other plants like that, and the grass dies. But once the rabbit population had been removed way back then, farmers fenced it in and could graze sheep and cattle. And as I said, the cereal yields had already gone up hugely in 1955-56, and followed by grass and milk production and sheep production as well. And that's the history, a tiny bit of the history, which we're intertwined with. And we turn round, Matthew, and you can see the ground is actually a great deal higher. And I bet you couldn't walk across there where Rat is without looking like you've been on too many gin and tonics.
Rabbits on High Ash Farm, and they're pretty much left unmolested here, yeah, apart from when they get a certain dog coming over to sniff their burrows.
That's not their problem. It's the local buzzards will take the young ones. There's foxes here, badgers here. They'll all dig them out and feast on rabbits. And don't forget, it wasn't very long ago that many of our listeners will remember eating and enjoying rabbit pie.
Raven. Chris, we were just heading off to another part of the farm and you've suddenly said...
Yes, raven, Matthew.
A raven?
Yes, it just flew past us and it's come down on the pasture next to two carrion crows and it's double the size of it. I saw one about a year ago after a report that somebody walking on the farm had seen a raven here, and I said, no, I don't think so. And it's a thundering great bird, and it's landed way out in the middle of the field, and you can see the size difference, strutting very confidently. Really, it's looking for carrion, probably, but it's feeding out with the carrion crow, which is pretty large itself, and it's a good double the size. I could tell the way it flew past us immediately, it was something completely different, which it is.
But really, we shouldn't have ravens here, should
we? No, they're just beginning to get moving southward. Something's happening, whether they're being tolerated more. The only place you see them south of here is in the Tower of London, obviously. But really they're a bird of deserted coasts, and particularly up in northwest and northeast Scotland, and they feed on carrion. But that's a great big bird.
So this one on the right is a raven.
Yes, that's a raven. You are so lucky.
Have you got binoculars?
Yes, I have got binoculars here.
I'd quite like to see this. I haven't been to the Tower of London for a long time.
Just focus it in for you. So what you will notice is a huge bill. And, yep, there we are. I've got him. I'll pass the binoculars over for you.
Let's have a look.
See if you can focus in. He's a good 150 metres away from us, but definitely a raven. You make sure he's on the right. He's just
shiny
in
shiny black plumage. That's
right, yes. And a huge down curved bill there. Sort of massive meat eating tool. Yeah, wow, you are so lucky.
Yeah, he's a big lad, isn't he?
He is a big boy. Yes. Yeah, that's a first for me to see. I've had one fly over the top of me. And as it flew over, it was croaking, so it was a completely different sound to carrion crows and obviously jackdaws and rooks as well. It's a really deep, throaty call, and it has been here feeding with the large flock of jackdaws and rooks. And I thought it would have gone by now, found a mate, but it hasn't.
So they're obviously accepted then,
yes,
by the other birds.
It was, yeah. It's all member of the same family. And for a moment, I thought it was a buzzard-sized bird flew past with the other two.
Yeah, you have a look, Chris.
Yeah, I'll have another look. Yeah. I just feast my eyes. There he goes. You can see the comparison in the size. There, that's flying next to a carrion crow. They've flown away. And that's a massive bird. Yeah, well done.
Raven.
Raven. Oh, yes, that's a treat.